Welcome to the Life and Times of Captain Barney Miller podcast. I am your host, Mike White. Joining me, of course, is the rookie, Chris Dashew.
Got any more tips for me? Because I'm looking for tips.
Like those tips, do you?
I do like those tips.
Rib tips or?
Whistler tips.
Ooh, nice.
Rib tips. Come on down to Captain Barney Miller's old-time family restaurant and get some rib tips.
He wants his baby back. We haven't seen her in a long time.
Right, Jesus.
Damn it.
On this episode of The Life and Times of Captain Barney Miller, we are talking about three episodes of Barney Miller. We are talking about three from season seven, episodes 4, 5, and 6, Dorsey, Agent Orange, and Call Girl. Dorsey came out November 27th, 1980. Agent Orange, December 11th, 1980, and Call Girl, December 18th, 1980. We are right at the tail end of 1980, can't you tell? Of course, we are talking about three episodes that are directed by Noam Pitlick, who directed Think Everything this season, which is, well, no, not everything, not everything. I think there's one episode that he didn't direct. Sorry, Noam. We are talking about the three episodes that star the one and only Dorsey. Well, that's the character's name. Paul Lieber, he is back as Detective Sergeant Eric Dorsey. And Chris, I am so glad that these are the only three episodes that Dorsey is in.
Oh my God. not a fan, huh?
Not really a fan, no.
So what's funny, I mean, we've mentioned Paul Lieber on this show before. I've mentioned that he's in one of my favorite episodes, late episodes of The X-Files. And then we've seen him end of last season as one of the stick-up men, right? Have come into the precinct. He looks identical to the way he looks now, like literally identical.
That big hair, man. I mean, Bob Ross would be like, man, tone that down, would you?
Yeah. I think... what's funny for me about this episode, Dorsey, is it obviously, yeah, it's the introduction of a character who we have not met before. We've seen the actor, but never met the character. And the character does not fit in the precinct at all. And I'm saying that even once he kind of, in the second and third episodes that we're going to talk about, kind of starts to get his footing, even then he doesn't fit. And I think it's due to the writing. It's not the acting. I think Paul Lieber's fantastic. I just don't think they gave him anything to work with. It's like they were like, well, Dietrich was fun and Dietrich made sense, so let's introduce someone who's even weirder than Dietrich. And yeah, it's not, I don't dislike these episodes as much as you do, clearly, or at least the addition of a new character kind of taking over the episodes, at least the first one and the little bit of the second one, the third one, not so much. But he's a lot, and I can completely and totally understand your feelings. And I can also probably assume that this character may have something to do with why our dear friend and writer of the only book about Barney Miller, Tales of the Old One, too, Otto Bruno, I kind of feel like this may be one of the reasons he's not a huge fan of this season, because this is three episodes being given to this character, essentially.
Yeah, I think that my real problem with him is that he doesn't have a personality. He's just kind of weird. He doesn't seem to have, like, you know, Wojo's got like a baseball, and you know that he was a Marine, and he's got a little bit of backstory, and he's got very much a personality. Same thing with Harris. You know, he's the writer. He's got the sharp dress. You know, he's got all this stuff. All of these characters have things that we have grown to love. And even when Arthur Dietrich came aboard, or I'm trying to think of I guess that was, you know, Levitt, or, you know, any of these guys, they all have a thing. And
long established thing.
Yeah. Yeah. He has no, like, oh, well, I really like, I don't know, hockey or something, you know, just give me a little bit of a personality. And instead he just, well, first off, he does not ingratiate himself with his coworkers whatsoever. And it's such a negative thing. I mean, it's what they've been fighting since almost the very first episode, which is, we are honest cops. We are not on the take. He comes in and immediately is like, oh, yeah, all you guys are on the take. I'm okay. I'm better than you. And that sets the tone for the whole character. Even in the second and third episodes, I was just like, why is this guy still here? Get this guy out of here. He doesn't belong.
And that's where there's no comedy being mined here. There's no comedy being mined from the fact that he doesn't belong. It's being mined from him rankling everybody else in the precinct, because for once, they're all on the same page that they don't like this guy. Like,
oh, yeah.
Levitt, I think they tolerate because, again, he adds some value. He comes up from downstairs. He brings up the mail. This guy, I mean, yeah, he shows up and he's just like, hey, listen to your fucking crooked cops. It's yeah, like, what? And like, the funny thing is, like, I can understand where he's coming from theoretically, because I guess if that was the expectation when you're working there, you're the young up and comer. That is the way things are. I'm assuming that was the way things had to have been somewhere. This isn't being written in a vacuum. But as people, you and I, who host a show about Barney Miller, who feel a connection to the characters on the show, to the actors who portray these characters, to see someone come in and go, look at all these dirty cops.
Right.
It's like, wait, like, what fucking information are you using here? And like you said, it's one thing to not ingratiate yourself to the characters in the show. It's another thing to not ingratiate yourself to the audience who's watching the show. Because that feels like the bigger problem. Less, I mean, the characters in the show are going to deal with it because that's the way they're written. But if the audience doesn't like you, they're going to want you gone immediately. And I completely understand your sentiment.
Well, it's like, even if he had said, oh, I talked with Lieutenant Scanlon and, you know, he warned me about you guys or something where it's coming from outside, but instead,
right, would have made perfect sense.
Yeah. He's like, well, I saw you, all you older cops again, you know, like not doing very well with that. I saw all you older cops and, you know, he looks at Harris with the way that he's dressed and everything. And he's just like, well, I just kind of assumed. It's like, well, you know what happens when you assume they're Dorsey. So,
right.
Not good. Not good, Dorsey. Yeah.
Jack Reacher says assumptions will get you killed.
Very good. Yeah. And he just puts his foot right in his mouth. And yeah, it's tough. The story itself to the Dorsey episode, not too bad, though. I really thought they could have put a little bit finer point on it. We've got this heroin addict. And I kind of like this heroin addict, how he's just like, this is a great time to be a heroin addict. My habit that used to cost $150 a week only costs $75 a week. And I'm just like, $75 a week in 1980, that's a lot of money. I mean, it's not like a, you know, $6 bowl of chili in 1973 or right. something, but it's a lot of money. 75 right. bucks a week. That's more than my chai tea latte costs when I go to Starbucks, if I were to get one every day.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of money. But I do like that, again, like Barney Miller is a show that doesn't always do the thing that you expect with these kinds of characters. And yeah, kind of painting him sympathetically, I think, was smart.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's pretty sympathetic as a character. But at the same time, like, he's obviously, you know, he is still an addict. So the show has to kind of balance those two things. But I don't think it really, I mean, given the way that they've treated sex work in this show, I think this is a lot more interesting of a way to treat an addict on the show than the kind of fumblings early on with sex workers that the show had. I will say, though, I think the character of the drug kingpin, Cal Gibson's Mr. King, I mean, I think that scene's funny, obviously. I mean, it kind of is part and parcel with the problem with this episode, which is Dorsey has to be shown that they're not dirty cops. And so Barney has to reject something that would be hard for anybody to reject, especially on like a government salary or like a you know, like a policeman's salary, which is like millions of dollars, essentially, that they're foregoing here. But, you know, I think it's an interesting plot line. I just, to your point, like Dorsey, just as much as I like the actor, he's just in the way. And it's like, why are you here?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And I like that Levitt asks as much, just like, what the hell, man? I should be up here, not this new guy. I'm like, yeah, you're right, Levitt. Because to defend Levitt a little bit, when he is wearing the plain clothes as a detective, he is not bad at being a detective whatsoever. I think he does a really good job.
Well, and that's what I don't understand. So if everything I've read and done research about is to be correct, this was meant to be a reoccurring character. This was meant to be a new character added to the squad to be a new, you know, cog in the comedic machine that is Barney Miller. And he was such a unappealing character for the fans that he's in three episodes and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's unfortunate because like it feels in a lot of ways like an extended Wojo's Girl, where like there's this thing kind of injected into this episode that it doesn't I agree with you. It doesn't work. I just give it a little bit more of a pass because I like Paul Lieber, but I feel like he got really short shrift here.
Oh,
like, I'd be totally really mad. I'd be really upset if I was him for a number of reasons. I would be really upset if I was Ron Carey for a number of reasons. Like, if I was Ron Carey, I feel like I'd be pretty disappointed too. Like, again, narratively, it's a disappointment, but also like this is the logical moment if you're going to bring somebody else in to just bring Levitt in. Like, I get that the conflict that they're creating here can also be mined for comedic gold. But again, like, if the comedy were funny, I would agree. But because Dorsey is such kind of a wet blanket throughout, it's not worth defending. This is not my hill worth dying on with Barney Miller. You know what I mean? I would love to meet the person who was like, I really wish Dorsey was in more episodes. Because, like, I don't think that there was anybody willing to do that, clearly, at least not when the show was originally on.
I mentioned the heroin addict, and I think they could have done a better job with this because they had Michael Lombard come in halfway through the show. Fucking amazing. I love Michael Lombard, and this is his third or fourth appearances, and he plays this cigarette addict, a smoker, who does not want to give up the habit. He is undergoing... It's kind of like that Stephen King story, but not nearly as severe. He's going through electroshock to keep right. him from smoking. And the guy who comes in, Bill Adelson, played by Daryl Zwerling, he's pretty good as well. He's the head of this whole thing. But you've got a nicotine addict and a heroin addict in the cell at the same time. There should have been something that was talking about drugs and what's an accepted drug versus a non-accepted drug, and talked about how, you know, one guy, he's the heroin addict, is going through withdrawals. There should have been something there about, you know, our friend going through cigarette withdrawals, and he should have been dying for a smoke, but he can get a smoke whenever he wants. There should have been, again, something like that. I would be fine with Arthur Dietrich coming in and talking about how there's this double standard in society between good drugs and bad drugs. And I would have loved had Bill Adelson and Mr. King had a discussion about how they're both, you know, one's trying to stop people from taking drugs, the smoking addiction guy, versus the other guy who loves when people take drugs. But poor Mr. King, he barely gets anything. He gets that one scene with Barney, which is a great scene.
Yeah.
But not nearly enough. And maybe I'm out of line, but I thought that would have been a great conflict to have these two different drugs and these two men in the cell.
Well, it would have been more entertaining than having Dorsey just like go to the bathroom over and over again.
Yeah.
Which is literally what happens. Like, I think I came into this episode recording a little bit more positive on Dorsey, and I think I'm souring the longer we talk about it.
Oh, boy. I'm sorry.
No, it's perfectly fine. And it's perfectly fine because, again, like, it's in a vacuum. I thought it was okay. You know what I mean? But then listening to you talk about it and also knowing the fan response is not incorrect. Like, the fans had a point and there's a reason he was no longer in the show. But it's twofold. It's narratively because, like, I have to assume people were like, why not just add fucking Levitt to the show then if you're going to do this? But also, again, like, it's like someone thought they had Arthur Dietrich's comedic timing down and that could be transposed onto another character, and it can't. It just can't. And I don't know why they were thinking it could.
Right. And he's just weird. He doesn't have the intellect behind him like Dietrich does.
No, and that's the thing. I mean, there's a scene between Dorsey and Dietrich where he's like telling him, like, you know, I was, you know, I get it. I was the new guy. I was here for 3 months before they gave me a desk. And he starts like getting angry about it, which, right, like, that's what the scene is being mined for. But Dorsey just stands there. He's just a cipher the whole time. And again, like, I don't want to see the characters that I've grown accustomed to being attacked by this outsider who doesn't know them. And like, that is what it is. And I get that they're trying to create, you know, conflict. Very contrived is what it feels like. It's so contrived. Yeah. Because again, like, there are plenty of other directions this could have gone. It's not trying to think that these guys are dirty cops, because like, that's fucking far, far from reality if it's ever been one. But again, the fact that even beyond this episode, he never does anything else. Like, in the next episode, it's just the same thing. He's just kind of standing around.
Yeah.
standing around. Like, it's really just a bunch of standing around for Paul Lieber. Like, he's not even really doing anything, which also in and of itself is the show.
Right. Yeah, it is. And I agree with you that he was underwritten and just didn't have nearly enough to work with. I think that this could have been a much better episode with my complaints than with my complaints about Dorsey as well. It's just like, come on, guys. Like, it feels very half-baked for everyone involved in this.
For Barney Miller, too. Like, of all the things, like, Barney Miller's never half-baked for the most part. Like, the only time it has been is something like Wojo's Girl. And that's what, again, this kind of feels like that, where it's like, you guys are kind of oddly floundering in a way that is atypical of Barney Miller. Like, I think we've said it multiple times, like, even when this show isn't the great episodes that people remember so fondly, still a pretty good 22, 23 minutes of TV. Like, it doesn't disappoint in that regard. I mean, even in this episode, there are some funny, you know, funny bits, like Harrison, the non-smoking guy. I mean, that is hilarious. Like, that is funny. Harris just kind of needling this guy constantly the whole time he's here in the precinct is great. But again, you have to take those small good moments with a lot of really just, again, bad writing. That's all it is. It's really just bad writing. That's genuinely where it kind of stops and starts. There's nothing Paul Lieber could have done to save this character being so underwritten the way that he is.
Right. And why, you know, like, all these names of the writers, the story editors, they're written by, they're all familiar names. Frank Dungan, Jeff Stein, Tony Sheehan. Sheehan's got the writing credit. We know that that's not always the case when it comes to a show like this, where it might be somebody else has written, but Tony gets the credit or whatever. But come on, this is not what we're used to when it comes to the quality of Barney Miller.
No, and that in and of itself, I think, is the big failing here, is this doesn't even feel like Barney Miller. It feels like a lesser show masquerading as Barney Miller. And a lot of that is just the fact that Dorsey is the focal point of this episode. I mean, the next two episodes, I think, are better, marginally better, only because it's not titled Dorsey and he's not the focus. He's just in the background, which, I mean, again, like, once he's in the background, he effectively disappears. So there you go. But yeah, this might be one of the worst episodes of the show, I think, without a doubt.
Yeah, in the meantime, the next episode, Agent Orange, is very much something that we've seen before. It's a little bit of, you know, Wojo on a social crusade, which I love. I kind of like these episodes, especially because they're not always happening. When they do happen, it's just kind of a nice thing. And I've missed Wojo. It feels like I haven't seen Wojo really in action for a while. And now he's back in this episode big time. Even with the horrible wig that he's wearing, this whole thing he arrests this guy, and the guy is talking about how he was exposed to Agent Orange, and that gets Wojo thinking. And I mean, this was a major problem, probably still is for some guys, where they were exposed to these horrible chemicals back in Vietnam, and nobody fesses up, nobody talks about it, nobody accepts responsibility. He gets these three guys in here to basically talk about who's responsible, and each one is pointing at the other person like a fucking Spider-Man meme.
Keep pointing fingers at one another constantly. Yeah, I'm going to pass the buck on to somebody else.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it could be Ferris Bueller's dad is the guy to blame, or...
I know, right? I found that immensely. I was like, where is that guy from? Oh, right. That's Ferris Bueller's dad, right?
Yeah, yeah. Or it could be the guy that worked with Murphy Brown. He might be to blame. Or it could be the third guy who I don't think I've ever seen in anything before, Robert Phelan. Or maybe I have and I just don't remember, because apparently he was in Halloween, but I don't remember where he was in that one. So, but he didn't have a career past 1994, I guess. So I'm not that familiar with him.
Oh, he's the guy that talks to Donald Pleasance outside. He's like, you don't know him like I do. With Donald Pleasance's accent.
Gosh. Yeah. You can't do better than Donald Pleasance in Halloween, though.
I know.
He had the blackest eyes. Joel's eyes. I shot him six times. Yeah.
he's fantastic. Yeah, why isn't he in this show?
Oh man.
But I will say Louis Giambalvo, the actor who plays the Agent Orange victim. And I mean, right. Again, I think that's kind of, you know, obviously in 2024, Agent Orange is probably not as big of a deal for people alive now. I mean, there's still people, like you mentioned, dealing with it. And obviously plenty of people in Southeast Asia have been affected by Agent Orange.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Now.
I think the more contemporary comparison is what Jon Stewart has been championing, which is the burn pits that they were doing in Iraq and Afghanistan, that they were like inhaling all, like,
right.
Soldiers were doing the same thing, inhaling things that they shouldn't have been because they weren't told that it was dangerous. And then all of them getting lung cancer, which is, I mean, again, and our own government right now doing the exact same thing, pointing fingers, but doing nothing, which is, you know, great. Not great. And if you don't agree with that, fuck you. But the thing that I like about this is like you've mentioned with Max Gale as Wojo, this is like, where have you been?
Right.
For
right.
So long. Like, and that's the thing. Like Max Gale's amazing in this show. Like we've known this. We know this. Max Gale's amazing in everything he's in, I'm sure. And this is the only thing I've seen him in, but I know that he's great in everything because he is a fantastic actor who has grounded this character who could really be unrealistic in a way that I think speaks more to him as an actor than necessarily the writing. And I think I would say the same thing about any of the main actors on the show have embodied their characters so brilliantly that I'm sure they were probably telling the writers, like, that's not what they would say.
Oh, yeah.
I feel that in this episode, because like you said, this episode is timely in a way that at the time it's timely. But I think still now, if you watch it, you can see the dysfunction that we still experience in our own government on display here in, you know, in the early days of the 80s when this is just then a thing. And watching it now, it is hard to watch because we know that Agent Orange is such a thing. And realistically, the character of Wojo Howitz probably maybe died in the mid-80s, like, because he may have gotten cancer from Agent Orange, like so many other Vietnam veterans. And is that terrible to think? Yes, but also at the same time, the show is broaching that topic in a way that doesn't feel out of character for the show.
Right. Well, it was it this episode where they're talking about people who are thrill seekers after the war?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Because that all of this stuff was really touching home for me as the son of a Vietnam vet, because one, according to my mom, he had a spot on his leg after he came back from the war that just never healed. And two, he died skydiving because he was, I think, you know, in hindsight, that he was probably looking for those thrills that he was getting in the war and was trying to recapture that somehow. I think it's really stupid to be a skydiver when you have a 2-year-old kid at home, but hey, you know, he lived his life like he wanted to. So
what? What
did you not just know any of this?
No.
Oh, dude, yeah.
This is a genuine reaction you're getting from me. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. No, that was my biological father. He died when I was like just over 2, I believe.
Skydiving.
Yes. Chute didn't open. So, yeah. That's the one thing you'll never find me doing, Chris, is skydiving. I will do a lot of stupid things, but I will stay away from that one.
What? Dude, what the fuck? Jesus.
Yep.
What a terrible way to go. Like, oh my, I am sorry. I did not, Jesus, why? Whoa, dude, that's wild. Holy shit. Yeah. But I would be inclined to agree with you, though. Like, it because, like, that is a thing. Like, that is a thing. And chasing that, like, I guess what was a dangerous behavior or, like,
right.
I mean, it's like
adrenaline rush. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like people that, I mean, you know, you can be addicted to a lot of stuff, but, you know, you can be addicted to that, the adrenaline. It's like no different than being addicted to sex or drugs or anything else, you know, or being addicted to, you know, your life being in a constant state of chaos, which I have met that as well, which is just as miserable as all the other addictions that you either personally deal with or know someone that you want to be around them, but you understand, like, you've made peace with the fact that this is the way that they are. Like, yeah. And that's the thing about this episode. It's like, how much of it is their fault and how much of it is not their fault, and how much of it is the government culpable and could take responsibility for and just refuse to. And, you know, I mean, obviously Vietnam is something that we're still talking about right now, and we will probably continue to talk about from here until the, you know, eventual heat death of this planet. But I mean, That's insane, dude. What? Jesus Christ, man.
So the one thing that rang really false for me in this episode was how upset Ernie was getting by Wojo calling in these three guys. And kind of like, I understand Serrano was arrested for one thing. And, you know, you're right. It was Dietrich, I think, was talking about the Vietnam syndrome.
Right.
And but yet Wojo focuses in on the Agent Orange, and then it suddenly becomes a personal thing for him, which I totally understand.
Because he got sprayed with it.
Yeah. So it's like, Barney, you really shouldn't be this upset. Plus, this is what Wojo does. Wojo goes on these, like, missions, you know?
Crusade.
This is what, crusade, yes, that's a perfect word for it. And this is a very noble crusade, Barn, that he's getting these three guys in here and having this conversation and speaking his piece. I mean, I love when Wojo gets upset, you know?
Right.
He hollers at these guys.
No, Barn. He always gets so mad. It. Yeah. But it's like righteous indignation. Like he, it's 100% justified. And that's the thing. Like we all wish that we could get our 5 minutes with somebody in power to give them a fucking piece of their mind or our mind. You would, I would, we all would. And it's not even the same person for all of us. It's probably different people, be it local government, state government, federal government, not even government, but your own bureaucracy within your own job that you have. You probably hate your own fucking boss or upper management or whatever. And we all want that opportunity to tell them to go fuck themselves with a, you know, with a pair of Wolverine claws strapped to their arms. But the thing is, none of us get that opportunity for the most part.
Right.
So living vicariously through Wojohowicz is fantastic. And like you said, it's done in a way that feels real. And like you mentioned, he puts more of it on his back because, again, he got sprayed with Agent Orange. So he feels it. This feels even more personal than all the other things he's gotten upset about. Because, again, like, and we had the episode, correct me if I'm wrong, where he was like all bent out of shape at anti-Vietnam protesters, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that like was verging on as close as this gets. But the moment he realizes he's been sprayed with Agent Orange, it goes from 10 to quote Spinal Tap to 11. He really just like, and Max Gale's performance is fantastic. It makes us forget that Dorsey's even in this episode.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Dorsey has his thing. And again, Dorsey's not really making friends here. He tries, he lays out this whole spread for breakfast and all this, but then he throws out Harris's tea. It's like, what are you doing, man? If you have a problem with the tea, put it on Harris's desk. Don't throw out another man's tea. That's just rude.
Yeah, it's, again, like, I don't understand why they're writing this character this way if he's meant to be ingratiated into us as fans of the show. Like, you are doing everything you can to make us hate this character.
Yeah.
Why? You might as well have him show up with, like, a swastika on his forehead and screaming about how much he hates Jewish people. Like, that, they're not doing anything to make him seem like a character who needs to be here any longer. As much as I like Paul Lieber, they are just making his character a, like, for whatever reason, a walking dartboard that everyone just keeps fucking throwing darts at and hitting. And it's just like, this guy just needs to go. As much as I like him as an actor, he did not need to be past the last episode, because like now he's just melted into the background completely.
Yeah, him and Mike should have gone and hung out.
You know, Doris Roberts is in this episode, right?
I was gonna say, yeah, our B plot is Doris Roberts and Peter Hobbs back at it again. The Browers are back. The I can remember him with the gold stuff. I'm trying to remember what his second scheme was, but in this one he is now a nudist. And has moved Harriet into a nudist building.
Great.
Yeah. Which, hey, you know what? That's great. And I like that Barney, you know, everybody seems like somewhat okay with it. We're not, they're making fun a little, but this whole thing of them being out in public and exposing, joke intended, exposing themselves to people who are unawares. It's like, yeah, no, if you're nudist, just keep it to yourself, you know, go to a camp, do this, play some volleyball, whatever you guys do. That's great. But yeah, being in the middle of New York City as a nudist when you're like out on the roof or downstairs and your windows are open, it's like, just, yeah, keep some wraps on it. You don't need to be tossing your bits and berries around.
On the next episode of Bits and Berries with my actress.
I'm trying to remember what the me wedding tackle.
My old John Thomas.
Right.
Oh, you could. I mean, you know, I like Doris Roberts, obviously. She's fantastic anytime she shows up. So did I need them playing the same characters again? Nah.
Again.
I mean, it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't add anything. I mean, it doesn't detract either. It's funny that these two people are constantly coming into the police station to have their like marital problems dealt with. I find that rather amusing. But I think honestly, this is one of those episodes where like the A plot was enough that you could have had a subplot focusing still on the A plot be the B plot. Does that make sense? So like Dietrich doing something with someone in terms of the Agent Orange thing would have made more sense, as opposed to like just having these two random married people like in the middle of this kind of on a very special episode of Barney Miller. It's like it's not, we've seen it closer before because of the rape episode being pretty much like, or the Harris incident. Those are like two on a very special episodes. But this one is that Agent Orange stuff has the same feel to it because it ain't funny. Like there's nothing funny about it. The only thing that's funny is the governmental dysfunction, but like that's also really not funny. It's not funny. It's fucking pathetic if it's anything.
And so, yeah, she's been on here a few times, but she does come back at some point and play a different. Oh, I'm sorry. I take it back. Her very first appearance, she was Louise Kaufman. And yes, after that, she is constantly Harriet Brower, even on the episode Wojo's Girl. Unfortunately, this is her last time on here. We are saying goodbye to Doris Roberts and her husband on here. So
no more schemes from her crazy asshole husband.
No. He didn't even know. He was investing all of his money in gold. And really what you got to do is invest in zinc. You know, that's what Richard Libertini will tell you.
Or technology to make you invisible, because that's the thing I think of Peter Hobbs from is to see the invisible man. You remember that?
I don't remember that.
He was like the old man.
Oh, he was the blind guy, right?
Yeah.
He's amazing. Yeah. I always like him. I usually associate him with another movie that we've talked about recently, 9 to 5. But yeah, Man with Two Brains, Sleeper. This guy, he had an amazing career. But compared to Doris Roberts, I can't even fathom how many things she was in over her career, because she was everywhere for decades.
She's in one of my favorite comedies of all time, Grandma's Boy. She is so good in Grandma's Boy.
That's
her amazing. And it's her and I forget the other. Shirley MacLaine is in that movie. That's who
it is. Is it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And then
No. Shirley Jones is in that
Shirley
one.
Jones. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's them two. And then I forget the other actress's name, but she's the emotional core of that entire movie.
You're going to love this. The other person, Shirley Knight. So it's two Shirleys and a Doris.
Okay. You've seen Grandma's Boy, right?
Yeah. That was Nick Swartzen or
no. Alan.
He was
Alan
in
Colbert.
It. Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while,
Gilmore.
But I do remember liking it a lot because, I kind of like those stupid comedies sometimes.
Yeah, well, and it's one of those like all of Adam Sandler's dumb little friends making a movie together, like Peter Dante, and obviously, like, who's going to give Alan Covert the lead in a movie other than like I mean, I love him as an actor, and I think he has great comedic timing, but like, that's a thing that because you've worked with Sandler so much, but she's amazing. Like, genuinely, she's really funny and really sweet. And like, again, she grounds the movie in a way that, again, only someone who is as talented as Doris Roberts, who, again, we didn't even mention. I mean, like, I think most people my age would know her from Everybody Loves Raymond because she's the mom, right?
Yeah.
It was her and Peter Boyle, no?
Right, correct.
Right. Like, I mean, that alone, the cast of that show alone. And then you have her and Peter Boyle, like, Jesus Christ. Oh, like, there's a reason that show ran for so long, and it wasn't just because of Ray Romano. So, so I don't know what that was supposed to be.
I think it was all Brett Garrett myself, but.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, and that's the only time, other than the whole breakfast spread, that I remember Dorsey even being in this episode, is when he's freaking out that Doris Roberts is going to walk out into the precinct naked. And I love when Harris just walks up and knocks on the door. All right, Mrs. Brower, come on out. And she comes out fully clothed, just like, I was just making a point. I'm like, yeah, Harris is smart. You're not, Dorsey.
Yeah.
Though, of course, Harris has been exposed to these lunatics three times before.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, like, well, that's the other thing. What's funny is the way Lieber reacts to it, like the his character, it feels out of step with the rest of the precinct, because like they get it. And he's like, bah! It's like, No, you don't understand. Like, this is commonplace, my friend. Like, this is like not even that big of a deal compared to some of the yo-yos we get in here. Like, they're not pretending to be Jesus or possessed by ghosts. Like, that's like a Tuesday for us. So, which I wish they would acknowledge that. I wish they would have acknowledged that in the show. Just been like, you won't believe the shit that we've had to deal with here. Like, and like that, like Dietrich, because like Dietrich kind of like starts getting into it a little bit, and he stops when he's like, you know, 3 years I had to have mine. But can you imagine if he was just acknowledged any of the things that they've had to deal with to this guy? That would be enough to Winston Zeddemore force this guy to run away. Like, be like, I'm not okay with this. No, thank you.
Right. Yeah. And then I don't know, maybe Dorsey finds his calling, pun intended, in the next episode with Call Girl, where he seems very taken with this 14 and a half year old hooker. Okay.
Yes.
Sure. And I don't understand. I like her in here, Rhonda Halleck, the character played by Tasha Zemras. I don't know why she's in this episode other than to give like quips here and there. She's the African-American hooker that comes in with the other hookers. And it's like, I don't get that. I don't know why she's there. Like, they run in the high class prostitute, and that opens up this whole can of worms for Bernie, where he's getting calls from judges that know that their names are in this little black book. How odd that we watch this episode the same week that Epstein's flight logs become public, right?
I know, right?
What's old is new again. And then you've got the younger hooker that Dorsey is just like, why are you doing this? And then he eventually bonds with her over missile command. Okay.
Yes.
Here's the zeitgeist, guys. It's video games, you know, coming
video
in.
Video games, guys.
What a, like, weirdo. What
yeah. What's up? Hello, fellow kids. Like, Jesus Christ.
And then you have the black one. And it's like, okay, like, she gets off some good quips, but like, she should have been doing something. Like, poor Dietrich in this episode, he is trying to undergo, quote unquote, the new celibacy. And I had to go look it up. I was reading the Washington Post. If you will indulge me, I'm going to read a couple paragraphs
indulge
from this story from August 2nd, 1980, ripped from the headlines, Chris.
Whoa.
It was bound to happen. Just when Plato's Retreat and the Pleasure Principle are playing in Peoria, the news is out from California, Trend Central, that sex is out, O-U-T, out. Celibacy, which used to be for everyone but monks, nuns, shakers, men recovering from hernia operations, and teenagers with terminal acne, is in. Don't laugh. According to author Gabrielle Brown, celibacy is the only sane reaction to the sexual revolution of the last two decades. The one-night stands, the group gropes, the wife-swapping, bed-hopping frenzy of orgasmic pursuit. That's where I'll stop there. But first off, I was always taught that celibacy means not getting married and chastity means not having sex. But somewhere along the line, they made celibacy be chastity, which always drives me crazy. But how weird is this? How weird is it that celibacy becomes a trend right when Reagan is about to take office? What the fuck?
Well, free love's over, baby. I mean,
we're right there on the verge of AIDS, too. So, yeah, fuck me, right? Yeah.
Well, no. Actually, the exact opposite.
Yes.
Don't fuck me. Yeah. I mean, yeah. That was the sequel to Just Shoot Me, I think.
Right.
I mean, look, if any character on the show is going to do it, it's going to be one of two characters. It would either be Harris, unrealistic and unexpectational, but it would be funny, or Dietrich, because he's already a fucking alien anyways. So, like, he's a weirdo. But that's the thing. It has been established that Arthur Dietrich has a sex drive, that Arthur Dietrich finds
he
women
to fuck nuns, man. His girlfriend was celibate, or should have been.
Yeah. Arthur Dietrich, nun fucker. But that's the thing. Like, you know, it's been established that, like, he is a sexual being. So the comedy that they mine, I appreciate it. It's just kind of bizarre. Like, Because again, yeah, like what a weird trend for everybody to like think is a thing that anyone should listen to.
Right.
Because I kind of don't get it. I don't get it.
The thing that I don't think pays off as much is because they have this happen before they reveal that he's taking part in the celibacy is when he gives Barney this report and he has done all of this crime categorization for all of the year, plus predictions for 1981 as far as what crimes are going to be higher and lower. And he just gives this whole spiel about this report that he's put together. Had we known that he is celibate, Chase, and is that is giving him newfound powers, I think that would have been even funnier.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, that should have been the gag, is that like, look right. at how much work he's getting done because he's not jerking off or having sex. Like, and like, yeah, why is the joke being told out of order? Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't work that way. Like, I'm, oh, get it? That's why he did it, because he's celibate. Like, okay, sure. I don't know. Like, this episode goes all in on the sex stuff. And I don't know. Like, I feel like I've seen this episode before.
Yeah. The only part of it that was new for me was having the return of Arthur Mallett, mostly known for me as, God, what voice did he do? Was he in Peter Pan? I know he was in Hook, right? He lost his marbles.
Yeah,
but he has a great voice.
The Secret of Nim?
Oh, Mr. Aegis. Yeah. You know what else he was in? Halloween.
He was also in Dagger of the Mind.
Oh, yeah. He sure was. He was that drunk guy that they were trying to, his umbrella? Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was in several episodes of Night Gallery as well. Like he's been in all sorts of things that we have talked about in the last decade.
He is the most detestable character, I think, that might have been on this show, like worse than the guy who is raping his own wife. He is a pimp for a bunch of teenage girls, including, and I'm sorry, I said 14 and a half, 15 and a half year old little, what's her name? Rhonda Halleck, I think it was the girl's name. What the fuck, man? This guy's a dirty old man with all of these young girls around. And oh yeah, no, I don't know what they do in their own time. He's a total pimp, you know. And Barney even asks him if he's a pimp, and what's that? I don't know. Yeah, it's like, this guy's awful. Like I kind of wish Barney had shot him.
Oh, I mean, my headcanon, because again, this is the last episode that Paul Lieber is in. My headcanon is that Dorsey goes and kills him and gets locked up because of it.
There you go.
I mean, because again, like he is kind of making it his personal mission at the end of this episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
To be like, I'm going to be on you like ugly on an ape, which is a great line.
It is good.
Great line. But like, you could see why Dorsey doesn't come back, I guess. I mean, that's the thing. Like, for a character who's so underwritten, what an ignominious way to be written off the show.
Yeah.
With nothing. I don't know if there's going to be anything in the next episode. I mean, he's not in the next episode, but given the time and place that this show is being written and the expectations of the audience, I don't think they necessarily have to address why he's not there anymore.
No, he'll go away. I mean, like Mike.
Yeah. Or like Amengual, like Chano.
Yeah.
Oh, Chano just left. They literally, I mean, probably
he's
Chano
still on the board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He still works for the police department, but he's just not there. Same with Wentworth, you know. I mean, Fish even. Like Fish, they kinda obviously gave some fanfare, and Jack Sue was a different situation, but Amengual and Wentworth just left. Like, but yeah, Amengual is still on that board. So get out of here. I don't know. Like this was an experiment that failed, similarly to Wojo's Girl. Dorsey is another failure. But hey, at the time and place when this show was being written and aired, this was the way you did that. This is the way you add new characters, and this is the way you create spinoffs. Is just fucking force that shit in. Like, we're just gonna new character. Here you go. And it's like, now he's gone. Okay, like that's the weird part. Like the way he's introduced is one thing, but the way he gets poochied out of the show. I mean, effectively, like at the end of this episode, they might as well have had him just, you know,
Dorsey died on the way back to Diedrich's home planet.
Like, and I wouldn't be surprised, because they handle his introduction pretty poorly. And unless they mention him in the next episode, they handle the way he's written off the show just as poorly.
Yeah. I think that another joke that doesn't go anywhere is this whole thing of the high class call girl getting a hot stock tip from one of her Johns, and then calling her investor and like, hey, we got to sell this stock in order for me to buy this thing because it's this really hot tip that I have. And for sure, this is going to go through the roof. Meanwhile, you got Harris there, who is increasingly becoming very venal when it comes to money and stuff. It's just like, okay, pretty soon, like, you know, he's going to disallow people from putting coal into the stove, you know, and he's just like, oh, what's that stock tip? Oh, you got something to tell me? And it doesn't go anywhere. Like, even at the end of the episode, it sounds like he's going to try to line up some business with her, which we know has happened. You know, Dorsey isn't all wrong. There is some untoward things going on, some law breaking, some scoff laws in here. They're engaging in prostitution, which both Chris and I completely abide by that. You know, sex work is real work. That's great.
Hell
but
yeah.
Hey, man, she's not going to tell you that stock tip. And you could have tried like 10 other, reasonably three other ways to get her to tell you that. And I would have appreciated a little bit more humor as far as like, just do something with that. But it was like implacable witness versus police detective. And he just keeps trying the same tactic over and over again.
I mean, I like more the idea of Dorsey saying to Barney, oh, that's why men your age fuck 14-year-olds, bro.
Jesus Christ. This guy,
universe,
man.
Did this guy beam in from? Like, Planet Dickhead? Like, it's so weird.
Yeah.
He is the worst. He really is. You're right. You're totally right.
Poor Dietrich. I love when he's just like, I'm going to go suck on my tie now. What the fuck?
Well, the way the episode ends is just as fucking strange.
Oh, that's
Harris
great.
Is about to tear up the sex worker's card, and Dietrich just goes, no! And it ends with him saying no. Like
the freeze frame?
Oh, God. Everybody, Barney Miller will be back next week with more episodes not starring Paul Lieber, because, yeah, by the end of this recording, I am on board with the Morsi was a bad choice brigade. It's just like, the more we talked about it, the more I realized like there's just no getting around it. Like, there's no getting around it. He does not fit in this show.
No. I wanted to like you. I like the actor, but he was just, they did him dirty. They definitely did him dirty.
He's someone that, like, I would be curious if he would, like, talk about his time on the show. Because I would love to know, like, what the expectation was initially. Like, was he going to just be a new cast member?
Yeah. Just bring him in. Oddly, in the third episode or fourth episode of the first season. Fourth episode. It's like, why didn't you start the season with this guy? And you wouldn't have to have an explanation at all. He could just be sitting at Nick's desk.
Right. And they walk in and they're like, who the hell is this guy?
Right. He could have been assigned when they became the homicide department, you know?
Oh, yeah. Give yourself plenty of opportunities to do that. Or just, you know, just introduce him by forcing him into our lives.
He's coming over from the 20th. He's their only homicide detective over there. So he's going to teach you guys how to do this because you don't deal with these violent crimes that often. Something. God damn it. I hate when I rewrite these episodes.
Well, and the thing is, it's like, it's not like we're really having to like flex our brains too hard. It's like,
no. Why
didn't they just do the obvious thing?
Exactly. Yeah. What a weird choice. Very weird choice.
And such a weird choice for a show that doesn't really make this kind of weird choice very often, if ever. The show is never this inconsistent, but these three episodes are inconsistent primarily because they have this looming threat of this weird character that nobody wanted and nobody asked for being introduced. And then, oh yeah, being just summarily done away with by the end of these three episodes. Like, we're never talking about Dorsey again, at least not in terms of him on screen. He's not coming back for the final episode to, hey, everybody, remember me. And the show ends with Harris shooting him. Spring.
It ends with, like, I want you to meet my new bride. She just turned 17.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun. Rhonda, come on out. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's so strange. Such a weird choice. And yeah, then to like make him somewhat like lasciviously pedophilic towards the end is just like fucking just as strange of a choice. So
yeah. Oh boy.
Boy. Otto, if you're listening, I get it.
We are ready to believe you.
Yeah, we sure are.
Well, when we come back next month to talk about more Barney Miller, if you are paying attention at home and watching these episodes with us, we will be talking about Resignation, Field Associate, and Movie Part 1 and 2. And we may be joined by our good friend Richard Haddam, who we've been talking a lot about James Bond with lately.
Yeah, I was about to say, if you are interested in supporting Mike or myself on Patreon, you can check out Mike's Patreon over at patreon.com/projectionbooth. Or mine, which is patreon.com/culturecast. And at the $10 level on either of our Patreons, you get access to Rankin' on Bond, where Mike and I, along with our friend Richard Haddam from Rankin' on Bass, talk about, well, James Bond movies once a month, every month until 2026, I believe. So,
well, until they start making those new ones. What about that Jinx spinoff movie? I'm still waiting for that.
That's the one. That's the one that I've been waiting for since the day that they announced it.
Oh, boy. She could drive an invisible car. It would be awesome. Yeah.
Put just diamonds on her face.
Oh, there you go. Diamonds are forever.
And that's just a preview of everything you could enjoy on Rankin' on Bond. This was our improv session just talking about James Bond for a sec. But yeah, no, that's where you can find that show. And that's where you can find most things I work on can be found at weirdingwaymedia.com, including this show. What about you, Mike?
Same thing. Weirdingwaymedia.com is the place to go for all things Mike White. That's me, not the director / writer, not a football player, not the former mayor of Cleveland. There's a lot of us out there, but I'm the real deal, baby. Though I don't win any sort of Emmys or give Jennifer Coolidge good roles and stuff. So there is that caveat. Not yet, but maybe one of these days I'll be working with Uncle Rico full time. Oh boy. Oh boy. Oh man. We've got so many Jennifer Coolidge impersonations on RuPaul's Drag Race this year. It's just been wall to wall. They even had two of them on Snatch Game, UK. So, or no, sorry, Canada. Yeah. I'm getting my incarnations of Drag Race mixed up.
That's the new hot impersonation to do is Jennifer Coolidge. Who'd have thought?
Yeah, I'm not doing mine, so don't wait for it. So until we come back, I want to thank John Walker for a theme song. I want to thank everybody for listening. All those people that have rated and reviewed the show over on iTunes, thank you so much for doing that. It's nice that you're spreading the word, getting us out there into the algorithm where maybe more people can find out that there is a Barney Miller podcast on the block. We are keeping it real for the old 1-2.